You are, as you probably just heard, listening to KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio. I'm Will with the Soper Sun, and we are bringing you everything under the sun, a little half-hour news segment, a collaboration between the Soper Sun and KDNK. We are hoping to get a call from the public information team for the Lake Christine fire. Obviously, that's the main topic of conversation anywhere you go in the valley for the last couple of days, up to just shy of 5,000 acres, it looks like. At least three homes lost. Kind of a you know, miracle almost sounds like the wrong thing, because it's been a lot of effort from a lot of folks to make sure that it wasn't more, not to diminish the losses of the folks who are, you know, dealing with the not having a house today. But I have, you know, stood up on the crown and looked down and seen the flames and seen the smoke. And some after being in Elgibel last night, I am surprised there is still a trailer park there. So good work, all you firefighters out there who are probably not listening because you're real busy or asleep.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, with me in the studio, Megan Tackett.
Hello.
Who, you know, has her own little lens into the firefighter world, and we won't plumb that too deeply. But if you are the public information officer and have lost our number, 963-2976, if you're somebody else who wants to talk about your experiences, I'm pretty sure everybody out there has been touched by this in some way. Even if you're over in Leadville, I bet you're getting some smoke right about now. Speaking of which, you know, air. Quality warnings out there. Do try to be cognizant. Minimize your outside time if you can, especially if you are in a class that might be at risk. That's you know, anybody with lung issues or the very young, the very old. Just be cognizant of it. We don't want you to become, you know, have to stay in your house for 2 weeks straight. But there's a lot of smoke out there, certainly in Carbondale right now. Megan, you've been at least up to Basalt today. What did you see on your way in there?
Yeah, went into Basalt. I mean, the fire's obviously not contained, but I got this optimistic sense that it was at least being kind of controlled. A lot of the flames that were visible yesterday weren't on the road up. It was mostly a lot of smoke, and you're absolutely right. I mean, even through the air conditioning in my car, I realized, oh, wow, no, I can even kind of feel this as I was going up valley. So that is the kind of thing that air quality definitely sneaks up on you. So be, you know, take precaution in that regard. Heard a lot of stories. You were talking about everyone being touched. Man, poor guy. Apparently, somebody who received a late night minutes notice sort of evacuation yesterday, along with 111 people registered at the Roaring Fork High School Evacuation Center. So kudos to all of those guys. You know, Ray Alexander, who has kind of taken a lead organizer position, told me that they've turned away at least twice as many volunteers as they actually had evacuees staying overnight. So, you know, the whole community is really coming together. But apparently this guy showed up and he had all of his most valuables that he was able to get from his home into his van. And then his van caught fire.
Lovely.
Yeah. So everybody has stories.
I heard that a van caught fire and started a small fire out that way. I had not heard that it was an evacuee. Yeah, it's just, that's insult to injury right there.
It really is. So, you know, every little bit helps because, man, stories kind of pile on stories with this thing.
That said, with the every little bit helps, what we're not looking for, apparently, is for anybody to drop food off at the fire stations.
Yes.
There were, you know, the fire chief was kind of joking around with the sheriff last night at a public meeting about how they're all going to come out 10 pounds heavier than they went in from all of the support, which speaks very, very well of the community, but is still not necessarily the best use of your efforts at this point.
No, and if you have put a lot of love and care into some sort of casserole dish or something and feel, oh, but wait, I want this to go somewhere, maybe call the Orchard, because I know that they were kind of setting up a space and at least at 2 o'clock this afternoon had put out calls for anyone who did want to drop off food.
Yeah, it seems like there are opportunities to be involved, even if it's, you know, helping Colorado Animal Rescue with, mm-hmm. with bringing large or even small small animals out. It sounds like that's something you did a little digging into, Megan.
Yeah, just real quickly, actually, because of a quick announcement that Gavin made earlier on this radio station, Katie and Kay. So I gave Kara a call and talked to Samantha Picard, who's the development manager over there. And she said that, you know, the real emphasis was on trying to at least temporarily relocate the current shelter residents in order to make sure that there was plenty of room for evacuated pets. But that being said, there was somebody who posted on our Facebook who was heading out to Junction and wanted to volunteer his services. I guess he got a hold of them, and they seemed like at least at that time they were set. So this really does seem like every, you know, hour to hour updates change as, you know, statuses change.
Well, I think that's a really good point to make, because we're a weekly newspaper. We put out what we have a call coming in. Maybe it's our PIO. Give us just a second. Katie and Kay, you're on the air. Oh, no luck there. Let's see if they try again. I may have messed it up. We'll just have to see. Hopefully that's our PIO calling in. But anyway, in the meantime, we just have to acknowledge we're a weekly newspaper at the Soper Sun, and so you'll still be reading what we wrote yesterday at noon. Almost a week from now. Okay, I'm going to give this another shot. Katie and Kay, you're on the air. Hello? I'm struggling with this. Megan, if you don't mind...
Seeking professional assistance?
Yes, please grab Gavin and we'll see if we can try this again. In the meantime, anyway... So please bear with us, both on our technical difficulties. Raleigh, if this rings again, will you make sure it comes in? And with the fact that we did our best on deadline yesterday to get you some information, knowing full well that it would be out of date by the time it went to print. But we do maintain a website, a Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram. We're trying to get information out to people in every venue we can manage. Please, and here we are on the radio, and Katie and Kay, which has been doing a fantastic job, by the way, of broadcasting. Really appreciate that effort from you. So tune in, beam up. What's dial up? Isn't the right thing anymore?
Not anymore.
But stay tuned, because we're doing our best to keep up with this. This is kind of the big one, you know, since coal seam, it's...
I mean, 500 mandated evacuations is nothing to sneeze at.
Well, and more than that at this point. All right, Raleigh, do your thing. Katie and Kay, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hey, third time's a charm.
Third time's a charm. Listen, I can hang up if you want to wait. Keep the line open for the PIO, but I do have pet updates.
Oh, yes, please.
Yes, please.
Do you want pet updates?
By all means.
Yeah, I just posted it to the Katie and Kay Facebook page. But let's see, I'm waiting for it here. CARE, Colorado Animal Rescue, has space for 20 to 30 dogs or cats from mandatory evacuated areas only. They also need temporary foster homes for adoptable pets, not the evacuees. Their number is 945-9173. Alpine Animal Hospital has room for 6 to 7 cats or 4 to 5 dogs, depending on if the animals can be caged together or not. They've taken in about 20 evacuee pets as of today. Carbondale Animal Hospital has 13 kennels available for small animals. Red Hill Kennels is full. The Orchard at Snowmass Drive seems to be the biggest unused, biggest kept secret, I guess. They're open for evacuee pets accompanied by their people. And they have space for at least 50 people with pets. This is not a pet drop-off center. Food and water for pets is available. So go on over. Show up and check in, says lead pastor Charlie Hill. Glenwood Vet has 14 spaces for large animals and 19 to 20 spaces for dogs or cats. Valley Emergency Pet Care in Basalt is not taking pets because they're too close to the evacuation zone, but they will handle critical injuries. Garfield County Fairgrounds can take large and small animals. You can call 625-2514 for the fairgrounds. Eagle County Animal Control is managing the small animals there. Make sure you put them in cages, and they can take dogs, cats, chickens, fowl, all that kind of thing.
Awesome. Thanks, Amy.
All right. See ya.
All right. Have a good one. Feel free to call back if we're all alone. Amy Haddon Marsh, everybody. Well, if we're waiting still on a PIO, we're gonna hold out hope because there is a lot that we'd like to ask that I haven't been able to answer today. We just so listeners understand why it's been a little rough transition to a Type 2 incident command structure today, which means the feds are running the show now, and that means different people to call, different means of getting information out, and also way more resources to actually fight this fire. Our local guys have been at it for not quite 48 hours straight, 36 solid scary hours, and so I'm real glad that they're getting a little bit of relief. So we do actually have other things in the paper besides information on the fire, and let's go through that real quick, acknowledging that again, this is all people are talking about. But when it all settles down and you get around to reading the paper, it'll still be there a couple days from now. I think the first thing you'll probably notice after Jane's lovely photo of the 4th of July parade on the cover, which I'm just pleased as punch with, is Megan Tackett's story on a group of folks with mobility issues, we'll say that way, who are starting to see some improvement sometimes after years.
Yeah, I was really astounded, and I understand it's a small case study right now with a small sample size, but it is beyond promising. So basically what's been happening is over the course of June, they did a 4-week very regimented, kind of 6 days a week in the pool with participants who had some sort of level of paralysis. They had two paraplegics and two quadriplegics that partook in this study, I guess is the best word for it. But it was run by a woman named Lauren Maloney Gepfert, and she, you know, graduated from Yale Medical School, but more than that, had an incredible background in a lot of martial arts and, you know, shiatsu and, you know, Swedish massage and all kinds of bodywork modules. And she's been working since the 70s on this program that kind of really married some more, you know, conventional Western medicine ideals with some more kind of holistic ideals. And she has been working on this program, and this was really where she kind of put her money where her mouth was. She took three locals from Colorado and one from California who had been told basically that they were never going to experience any kind of movement again in their affected limbs. And Adam Lavender, a local that I got the opportunity to talk to in particular, you know, he explained to me that, you know, when you have a spinal cord injury like that, the conventional wisdom says any kind of rehabilitation that you're going to see, any successes that you're going to get back are going to happen in the first 18 months to 2 years. He's had that injury for 6 years. And after a cumulative 18 hours in the pool at Iron Mountain Hot Springs, he explained by removing the gravity a little bit and the warmth of the water, he was able to stand independently for the first time in 6 years. You know, his wife was able to hold him standing for the first time in 6 years, which, as you can imagine, was an incredibly emotional moment for everybody involved. But all of these guys experience successes like that through this combination of what they call kind of speak back, talk back, where in addition to visualizing motion, they spoke out loud to themselves what they wanted to see happen. And yeah, it wasn't anything that I had ever seen or encountered before. But in the water, at least, you know, when you're in the warmth and without all of Earth's gravity on you, they were able to see just demonstrable improvements. I mean, you had a paraplegic swimming independently on his back, kicking and stroking without the assistance of a life jacket. I mean, these are not small feats. So there's a big push. Everything's been very well documented. And there's a big, big push right now for a documentary effort to try and get this in front of some more conventional institutions to see if, hey, why can't we make this a larger study? Why can't we see this? Because, you know, at the end of the day, talking to Adam was really powerful to me in particular, because he's the one that was able to really explain what it's like to be told never again. And he said that in the first 2 years of his injury, he was basically dying. He got bed sores, you know, which of course hospitals don't tend to treat until it's absolutely in its worst case. You know, he received no rehabilitation in certain areas because he was told it was a lost cause. And so, you know, now even on land doing body work, he's got body workers who are able to feel him assisting a little bit in his feet, assisting pushes and things. So all of a sudden, for the first time, he's seeing a lot of optimism. Every participant is seeing optimism at that level. And these parents are seeing optimism for the first time about their children's condition. So it was really, really powerful. And I was really excited to get to know everybody involved. And I'm looking forward to, there's going to be a 3 and 6 month follow-up on everybody's progress. So I'm looking forward to catching up with them then.
Yeah. I mean, under normal circumstances, I think that would be our top story. And it's, you know, it's nice to do the heartwarming stuff. And the positive stuff. The media gets a lot of grief, I think, for concentrating on the sad and scary, like what we've been dealing with the last couple of days. That is a big part of our job. Our role is to try to explore those things and be an outlet for folks and a warning. But it's also our job to highlight the cool things that are going on and to give people hope. So that's certainly the more fun things for us to cover. We just have to do it all. We do get to pick and choose, but we pick and choose with hopefully the community's best interest at heart there.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah. Megan, what else did you work on last week?
Oh, let's see. I got to chat with the, artist residents at the Clay Center, and that was very, very cool. Got to chat with Savannah LeBove and Stephanie Seguin, both of whom are kind of finishing up they're simultaneously finishing up a chapter and in the middle of it exactly. They both came, Savannah came from Baton Rouge. She had just finished her undergraduate studies at Louisiana State, and Stephanie actually came from Penn State, where she finished up her graduate studies, both in clay, in Savannah's case, also painting. But they just finished up their first year. They signed on to do a second year of a residency at the Clay Center. And this first Friday is going to be that exhibit. And it was neat because they had never met each other before. They both came here for sort of similar reasons, just needing some decompressed time after, you know, the cramming of academia and the kind of ivory tower pursuits of their art. Now they really had some studio space, and it was neat to see them and talk to them, because even though they're sharing a studio and doing their individual works, and they literally did kind of split the space half and half, there was no physical barrier. And it was really neat to talk to them about understanding and pinpointing the individual influences that one has gotten from the other at really a subconscious level. I had this really fun moment where, you know, Savannah was talking to me about how she did have that painter's influence. And so Stephanie's work is a much more muted color palette. And she found herself also kind of playing a little bit more with process and form instead of her typical emphasis on color. And then when I asked Stephanie, you know, kind of point for point, what did she see? She just was sitting there laughing to herself. She said, I didn't think I could think of anything. But when I started listening to Savannah, and then she holds up all of these bright, you know, magenta and turquoise color, like cut paper cutouts that she had been experimenting with in her work, wanting to introduce backsplashes basically for her vessel work. And so it was neat to see the girls just kind of bond in real time in anticipation of their show this first Friday.
Awesome. Well, yeah, it's first Friday, to my understanding, still happening, still tomorrow. So plenty of opportunities, Mounts Opus Music Fest, you know, stuff going on all over town to get out there and maybe distract yourself from the smoke a little bit and just have fun. You know, there is, I guess, at some point, not a whole lot a lot of us can do to help the situation up there. We're pitching in the best we can, at some point we have to live our lives. This thing is likely to go on for weeks. That's something that was sort of discussed last night at that same meeting. I think there's another one happening tonight for folks who are directly affected and just interested. I would encourage anybody who has a question that they'd like to see answered to give us a call, 963-2976. It doesn't seem like our public information officer is following through, or else I accidentally hung up on her right at the beginning there and she decided that was not worth continuing on. I hope that was not the case. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your questions. Maybe Megan and I can answer them. Maybe we can pose them to somebody more informed. Just in case you're tuning in right now, this is KD&K, commercial-free since 1983. Underwriting on KD&K is an effective way to market your business. Reach your friends and neighbors in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond with KD&K's reasonable underwriting packages. Email Greg at kdnk.org. I'm Will with the Soper Sun, here with Megan with the Soper Sun. Talking mostly fire, we're honest. I'm glad we were able to do a little interlude of the soft and happy things that the Soper Sun loves to feature. But if you're somehow unaware that Basalt Mountain is covered in a wildfire at this point, you should probably go to our website, go to the Eagle County Sheriff's Facebook, and get a little bit of information there, because there are forest closures in place, lots of evacuated areas. To my understanding at this point, 82 still completely clear. And are you able to go up the Frying Pan Road? Or I saw there were checkpoints in place.
Yeah, I actually didn't get a chance to go up that way, so I wasn't sure. The only thing that I've heard is just that Rafta said the Two Rivers Road stop was not going to be used, obviously. But everything else seems to be running as normal from my knowledge.
Yeah, we did get a chance to witness a Rafta bus on schedule as the flames were surrounding El Jebel last night. So we almost got a photo of that. I'm sure it would have made a good ad for them, because it's almost odd for those of us who are not directly affected, who are not being evacuated and trying to live out of Basalt High School, Roaring Fork High School, by the way. Real good places to start if you're displaced, trying to get information, trying to get resources. I think the folks at both of those locations can point you in the right direction for other resources as well. Those of us who are not directly affected, it's a little weird how normal things are, how business as usual is taking place just down valley here, and the buses are running, and there are some closures. CMC reducing its staff to bare essentials for the next few days. Roaring Fork School District suspending a lot of its programming up in the Basalt area, partially because Basalt High School is getting used as a facility. You were seeing some of that. I mean, from what I understanding, that Type 2 team has basically taken over the Eagle County Annex just by Crown Mountain Park there in El Jebel, and so consequently you're not going to be going in there to do any county business today.
Right. I'll say, though, I'm still floored by just the outpouring of support in general. When I was at Roaring Fork High School this morning, I guess jaywalkers showed up en masse with, armed with Red Bull and energy drinks, but also kickballs and baseballs and baseball bats to play with the kids outside, despite air quality stuff, just to remind them that, hey, this is awful, but you guys still need to play too. And, an art teacher showed up with a bunch of art supplies donated. So even when I was there, it seemed peaceful almost. You had kids coloring, and a lot of folks had actually left already. They had folded up their cots, not because they can return home, they can't, but everybody down here seems to have an evacuee staying with them right now.
Yeah. Several members of our staff, to my knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just think that's kind of heartwarming. I guess Walmart and Lowe's actually showed up at Roaring Fork High School as well with huge towers, like on a forklift, of water and Gatorade. And they sent them to the, firehouse because they didn't need it. And I'm wondering if the firehouse actually even needed it too. So it's funny how, so many donations and things and resources are getting passed around between the entities that are set up for folks. And it's just impressive.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of positivity to be found here. I just don't want to diminish the struggle that folks are going through, the commitment that the people trying to protect the valley from this the long and scary hours that they've been going through, that folks who have been evacuated, you know, the people, there's some houses up there, folks who have been out of their homes for 36, pushing 48 hours now.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be rough when, you know, you've got your pets with you. You've got, you're not sure if you're going back to find anything you own. And it's not a new story in this valley. Some of us who've been here a long time remember Colseim, remember Storm King, and, or the, you know, it wasn't, you don't have to be there that long to remember the fire up 4 Mile just a couple weeks ago. It's the story here. And I guess we could get on our soapbox one more time and just encourage people to be cognizant of those fire restrictions, and even just make an effort in general to minimize your risk. There's, you know, no specific restriction to my understanding about driving through a field of dry grass and letting your tailpipe light it all up. But I'd really prefer you didn't do that. the shooting restrictions we got a caller. Let's see if we can make this work. Katie and Kay, you're on the air.
Hey there. When you discuss things with your public officer who's giving information, can you ask about the use of the global super tanker that's parked and sitting on the runway down in Colorado Springs?
Okay, we will do that. Global super
Please
tanker?
Do. The global super tanker, it holds over, I believe, 20,000 gallons of repellent, and it's just sitting unused right now. I'd like to know why that's not being deployed.
Okay, I will certainly field that question. Thanks very much for calling in. Sorry you weren't able to pose it directly.
That's okay. Thank you for all that you do and for keeping us informed. We love Katie and Kay.
I'm glad to hear it, and we do too. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Have
stay
a good
safe.
One. You
Bye-bye.
As well. And everybody else out there, please. Please stay safe. And any way that Katie and Kay, or I think I can speak for Katie and Kay in that regard, or the Sober Sun can help, we are all committed as journalists to telling stories and getting the word out and you know, helping in any way we can. We're also just people who are in that very same position of kind of helplessness, looking at this big force of nature and wondering what our role can be to pitch in. So we're close to out of time. Coming up next, by the way, The Inner Game, live in studio. We're going to give them a little moment to transition. Again, if you didn't feel like calling live on the air, I understand. Feel free to give me a call. We got another caller. Give me a call at 510-0540 or call Katie and K 963-2976. Katie and K, you're on the air. Hello.
I'm on the air.
You are.
Okay. I just want to congratulate the Sulphur Sun and Katie and K and Aspen Public Radio for the way they're they've been covering this fire, particularly the Sulphur Sun, because it's a weekly newspaper, and this fire happened right before their deadline, and still they got a story in there, and I think that's to be congratulated.
Well, thanks, Fred. I recognized the voice correctly, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
All right.
Thank you.
We definitely appreciate that. We're doing the best we can. Again, don't hesitate to reach out to the Sober Sun. Our info is all in the paper. Or Katie and Kay, their info, 963-2976, and all over their website, katieandkay.org. We've got to get out of here and turn things over. Thanks, Fred, for calling in. And thank you all for listening. Stay safe.